What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Pickleball Connection podcast. I'm Danae.
And I'm Barrett. And today we are super excited to do another Cruise the News episode with you guys. And we are going to start off with a post from the kitchen. You ready for this?
I'm ready. Let's roll.
Hey, real quick, before we jump in, we just want to mention Selkirk's Nets. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting in pickleball, Selkirk has the best nets available. Not only are they the preferred net of the PPA Tour, but there are many options for all pickleball levels. If you're just starting out and wanting to grab a pickleball net, go to selkirk.com/collections/nets to find the best nets on the market. Okay, so for today's first topic, we're going to discuss something that's kind of been trending upwards in the pickleball scene. And this comes from a post made about a week ago from Dane Gingrich, who, if we know Dane, Dane's been around the game for a long time. He's been doing a lot of coaching, a lot of instructing, not only on, you know, pickleball techniques, but also pickleball mindsets.
And he was a senior pro, so he did play senior pro for a while, and he is a mental performance coach.
Yeah, I think he also released a book. I think it's called Pickleball Mindsets or something like that. But anyways, Dane had a post this past week. It got a lot of responses because of how the game pickleball is changing. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm going to read the first part of it. This is what it says, and then I want to hear what you have to say. Okay. He says, aggressive is the new patient. Instead of defaulting to slow and controlled, the game is quickly turning into attacking jungle ball. When in doubt, fire away at all levels. Now he continues to go on, but people were kind of disagreeing in the comments. People were agreeing in the comments. But what do you think about this idea of pickleball becoming a more and more aggressive, more and more fast-paced sport, and aggressive being the new patient?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We've been around the game since fall of 2019, long time. So back in 2019, the game really was very slow. If you guys have been around the game for a couple of years now, you'll know that the trajectory of the game has gone from primarily third shot drops, lots of dinks, to starting to have drives and, you know, getting progressively faster and faster. So I get what Dane is saying. And if you haven't been around pickleball a very long time, you might not have known that about pickleball. It used to be a lot slower, but I actually feel like the development of technology in paddles, I think that's a big reason why we're seeing the game change. Paddles have gotten a lot faster. The ball is coming faster. You have tennis players coming in that know how to do like really good topspin. And yeah, it's interesting. You're seeing, you know, players come in and fire away and they have really hot paddles. And for example, the men's game doesn't have a ton of firefights. It's really like one or two speed ups and the point's over because the ball's so fast.
Right. Like to your point, I remember watching men's matches in the at the professional level back in maybe just 2-3 years ago, you know, and it felt like the men's matches had very long extended dink rally points or rallies and long dink exchanges because they respected each other's hands and their ability to counterpunch the ball. But now it's almost like the opposite. It's like if you watch men's doubles, it's almost like who's going to pull the trigger first? And we want to pull the trigger first. We want to play fast. We want to play offensive. And I think to your point, because of the increase of paddle technology, the ball's coming faster and it has more spin, which allows you to be able to put more pace on it and it to still land in.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think about Dane though? He said that this is applicable to all levels.
Well, I think that has to do honestly with the paddle technology.
Yeah.
Because the reality is you don't need to be a pro to be able to put a ton of spin on a ball you don't need that almost that much technique like you used to. Like if you remember back when, you know, paddles really weren't this good, like you had to work pretty hard to get good spin on a ball.
Right.
Like, I don't know if you guys remember this. You guys do. This is crazy. But if you remember Paddlegate, when Carbon came out with their gritty paddle, we were all like, oh my gosh, you can put so much spin on this ball. And now it's like, that's the norm.
Yeah, they had a bunch of paddles recalled at one point because it sent the Professional Pickleball Association and the professional game in general into this frenzy of how do we monitor? We have to start monitoring and detecting grit levels because we're going to get to a point where maybe this is unsafe, or maybe, you know, paddles start to change over time. And so they had to put in a lot of regulations on paddles. There were some in place, but yeah, with the development of new technology, it's caused for the need for more regulation. But, you know, I did see in the comments of this post, a lot of people were mentioning that the best men's team in the world, the Johns Brothers, don't really have an aggressive play style. And so how can you say that the game is getting faster when the best team still tends to play slow? That's kind of what a lot of people were talking about in the comments.
I'm not saying slow's dead. You know, I think it's still really important to be able to dink. But what I am saying is, guess who's beaten the Johns Bros and how have they been beaten? They've been beaten by pulling triggers left and right.
Right. The game is getting faster. I think maybe where I disagree a little bit with at all levels, that part, you know, I disagree that the game can be played at a very fast level when you're a very beginner player. And one, it's just important to be well-rounded and to develop all those shots. But I think it does require a certain skill level to be able to effectively speed the ball up. I think that you have to learn where to place the ball. You have to learn how to really manipulate the ball off the bounce and out of the air, which I don't think is a skill that, you know, 3-5 and below players really have fully developed, is how to attack off, you know, off of a roll volley or create offense off the bounce.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's like, I don't know if this is a strategy I would recommend to all levels, but yeah, I think one of the things that I would say is that I think that it's important to know what type of player you are. You know, are you a player that prefers to counterattack, or are you a player that prefers to attack? And I know, like for me, I went through the longest time when I was really finding myself like kind of mishitting my counterattack. And I found, you know, this breakthrough in my pickleball game when I was like, oh, okay, I can either get better at counterattacking, or I can start pulling the trigger before and I can dictate the point, you know? So I think if you struggle more on the counterattack side, maybe you have really good hands, but you don't have really good contact. You're not able to really get that ball down at the feet, then maybe your play style needs to change a little bit more to pulling the trigger first so that you can dictate a little bit more. But there are players, which I think the Johns Brothers are like this, that they prefer to counterattack. I think there are players that want you to speed the ball up because they want to put that ball right back and make you really uncomfortable with their counter. So I think just understanding, do you prefer that counter or do you prefer that initial speed up? That kind of was what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, interesting. The game continues to evolve, and paddle technology, I think, is a huge reason why we're seeing more and more people be aggressive. I think if you're a beginner and you're just starting out, it's very important that you don't just learn how to hit slow, but you also learn how to create offense and be aggressive. But it's also important that you learn how to take an aggressive hard shot and turn it into a soft shot and to slow the game down. It's going to help you be more well-rounded in your game.
Side note, do you remember like when we started playing pickleball, this was back when it was a lot slower, like learning your third shot drop was a non-negotiable in the game. Like you couldn't play the game unless you had a third shot drop.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I'd say, you know, drives weren't as scary.
Nobody did them. Nobody drove
the ball. Because they would get punished, you know, like because they didn't have as much pace or spin. Yeah,
so
I agree.
It's just kind of crazy to look at now. It's so common to do a third shot drive and do a fifth shot drop, you know. Point is, the game has changed a lot, and it's kind of crazy because we've seen a lot of change even in the past 4 years. So
yeah, absolutely. If you're looking to develop more of like an aggressive play style, you could go to playpickleball.com. You could check out the playpickleball.com YouTube channel. We're a little bit biased, but there's a great video there on how to hit a forehand drive and to add more power to your drive. I know Danae gives a really great tip at the end of that video, not just on the form, but actually how to create more power on your drive. So that's a great place to check into, a great resource if you're looking to gain some, you know, extra power on your drive. But
yeah, we're gonna go to the next one, I think.
Yeah, let's go to the next one.
And real quick, if you guys have also been around the game for a long time, we'd love to know what you think about how the pace has changed. Go ahead and comment in the comments below. We'd love to read them. So this next kind of, it's not even an article, it's actually a meme. And but people loved it. And maybe we'll see if we can put it up on the screen for you guys. But it's basically like a stick figure. He's holding a paddle and it has, you know, this phrase on it. It says, "This is Bill. He plays pickleball. He doesn't argue line calls during rec play because he's not a moron. Be like Bill."
Yeah, this is a big one.
So my question is, what are your thoughts on people arguing line calls during rec play?
So I think the big distinction here is during rec play. I mean, obviously it's one thing to argue line calls in a tournament because there's more on the line, there's more at stake. But in rec play, you know, here's where I stand. Okay.
P.S. I've seen you argue some line calls in rec play. So
no comment.
I'm excited for how you're going to answer this.
So here's how I would answer this. I think it's good for all players to abide by the rule, not just in rec play, but also in tournaments. When in doubt, it's not out. Okay. And part of that is because there are videos out there you can go look at when you just simply change the angle at which you look at a ball as it's next to a line, it can totally redefine the ball being in or out based off of your viewpoint. And so Ben Johns, another best player in the world, he's actually notorious for, you know, not calling lines, even if the ball looks out. There are other players who are notorious for calling the ball out, even though it's clearly in. I don't want to be in that boat. Here's the thing that bothers me, okay? What bothers me is when the other team so clearly calls the ball in, it's very questionable, and they do this thing where they pause and they look at their partner and they're almost like, "Are you sure?" Like, they're almost looking for confirmation from their partner. Like, "I just called that ball out, but are we sure it was out?" I'm like, if you had to check with your partner, that is too close to call it in. When in doubt, it's not out. You know, so I just feel like there's a lot of stuff like that happens where people, you know, or pet peeve of mine, when somebody calls the ball out, even though it looks in, if I were to say, "Are you sure that was, you know, are you sure that was out?" I'm just kind of, I want confirmation. That's what you probably see me do. Sometimes if somebody calls a bad call against me, I'm like, "Are you sure that was out?" I'll just ask. That's kind of my way. Cause I just like, if they're sure, I'm like, okay, cool. But if they're unsure, you'll find this pause. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the thing. If you're unsure, you shouldn't call it. That's where I stand. You know, what do you think?
I mean, in rec play, you know me. Have I ever freaked out about a ball, like landing in or out, or argued with anyone during rec play?
I don't think you've out loud argued with someone. I think that there's been shots that maybe have been clearly in. I can tell it bothers
you. And I'll look at you. Okay, this is what I do. I literally never waste my breath on arguing with the other team. But I'll look at you and I'll be like, "Dude, that was so in." And yeah, I just kind of move on. Because yeah, it's rec play. Like, I really, it's such a waste of my breath to argue with Kathy about the ball. I don't know. It's just not worth it to me. Yeah. But like you said, if we're in a tournament, I do get a little upset because I'm like, that was it. And honestly, if I get upset, then I end up calling a timeout because I just need to chill out before the next point, because I do get mad about that.
Yeah.
Because something is on the line, and that does make me mad. But I think, like you said, my biggest rule of thumb for you guys, if you were confused about out calls, like when in doubt, it is just, it's not out. Like if it's questionable, don't call it out. It's not even worth it.
Yeah. And just also to realize that maybe you clearly saw it out. That doesn't mean that the other team's not going to at times question your call because of the view that they have and the view that you have. But sometimes it's just better just to not make it more than it is.
Yeah. Like, you know? Don't die on the hill, you know? Like,
because I've probably missed calls before.
Yeah.
Know? And I wouldn't say I'm a perfect line caller. I try to be, but I think my pet peeve again happens when, you know, you ask for clarification from the other side and they seem to hesitate, like, no, I'm not sure. You know, I'm like, if you're not sure.
Yeah, sure. Don't call it.
Don't call it.
Like, I don't get it. It's rec play. Like, we're not, I don't know, unless you put like $500 on the line, I don't get why it's such a big deal.
Yeah. Anyways, I'd love to know your thoughts as you're listening though, guys. What do you think? Have you guys had experiences like this at rec play, or have you had moments where someone's called it out when it was clearly in, or vice versa?
And how do you handle it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think you guys could probably teach us something, you know?
Yeah, I'd love to hear how other people handle it, because I don't think I don't know. Like I said, I let a lot of things go because I just don't feel like it's worth it, but maybe there's a better way. I don't know.
Right.
Open to interpretation.
All right, should we go to the next one?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the next forum post we have, this comes from the Pickleball Forum group on Facebook, which does exist. If you type in Pickleball Forum to Facebook, there's like over.
Which, fun fact, I'm banned from that group.
She's banned.
Don't ask why. Keep going. Keep going.
She's banned.
But I'm banned.
Yeah, so I have to, I still have access for the two of us.
Let me back in. Okay, keep going.
I can't even remember why.
I'll tell you after.
Okay, cool. So this comes from the Pickleball Forum, and this is a post I found from a while back. I don't know how it popped up in my feed, but it says this: any tips for playing in a tournament with a partner you've never met? So this guy's referring to a blind date. He has a blind date when it comes to pickleball tournaments. He signed up with someone, never met him before. One of them could be from New Jersey. The other one's from freaking California. They meet in Denver for the first time on the courts. So this guy's asking for some advice. So I want to hear from you. Have you ever had a blind date at a tournament? What would be your thoughts on how to advise somebody to?
Yeah. Okay. I've had, let me think, 2 blind dates for tournaments. They were both a below average experience, if I'm being honest. It's hard. You know, like, my whole thing is, the reason why I ended up doing it is, like, you know, obviously we'll play tournaments together. And then I'm like, well, I'm already paying this much. Like, why not tack on an extra $20 and do women's doubles, you know? But it's hard. You know, you're playing with somebody that you've never played with before. And, you know, especially if you don't get any practice in before tournament day, like, you're kind of warming up and you're seeing them dink for the first time. And you're like, oh man, okay. Like, maybe I'll play this side. Or it's just like, it's really difficult. And, you know, I don't know if I have the best advice, but maybe one piece of advice that is kind of helpful is, like, even getting on the phone beforehand or texting and just being like, hey, do you have a certain side you prefer? Like, what's your play style? Like, do you like to drive the ball? Do you like to drop the ball? Do you like to, you know, play more aggressive? Do you like to play more patient? Like, I think just getting a general idea of, like, how to play. And then honestly, I think the biggest piece of advice I have is really try your best to, at the tournament, before you get into matches, play one or two warm-up games. Doesn't matter who you play it with. Find some random people that also are playing the tournament and just try to get in some games, because you'll find out really quick, like, oh, okay, you know, maybe we should stack left here, or maybe, you know, you don't really like this cross-court tank, so I'll do the cross-court. You know, I would say that is probably the best piece of advice that I have. Like, I think you can learn some things from talking to people. I think you learn more by doing an actual like warm-up game before the tournament. Yeah. But I want to turn it on you. Have you played with a rando, and do you have any tips?
Was Daniel a rando?
Yeah. You didn't know him.
Okay. I couldn't remember if I met him before or not. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. He would have been the only rando I've played with. But I mean, I think you guys
do good. Shout out to Daniel.
We got silver, like, it was like 2 years ago. Two or 3 years ago, we got silver at a PPA tournament. There's like 30 teams in our bracket.
Yeah.
We were both like semi injured entering the championship. And we were,
yeah,
like,
it was funny.
It was pretty funny. No, it was fine. I didn't really know how to mesh with him in terms of like our personality, maybe, but our play styles
great.
It actually worked. I think you're going to have different experiences with different people. But what I was going to bring up is, do you remember our friend that had that one experience with that rando? She plays pro now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Should we tell him about that?
Yeah, you can.
This is probably the funniest story I've heard when it comes to a blind date. So we have a friend now. She's playing at the pro level. But a couple years ago, I can't remember if her men's partner dropped out or something. She was needing a last minute men's partner, signed up with a rando. This guy shows up to the courts and kind of had a bit of a smell to him, you know, kind of smelled like he had smoked a couple cigarettes in his car on the way. Maybe not a terrible thing. I mean, probably wouldn't recommend that before a tournament. But the crazy thing is, between their matches, he would go out to the car and take a little smoke break. And it was actually really funny just hearing her responses. She carried that team. He had scrapes on his knees.
Dude, granted, she's a beast. So she would carry a lot of guys that tried to partner with him.
I know. I actually, like, it was really endearing. He was really,
he tried his best, and it was,
he was very grateful. I think he said it was like the only gold medal.
He said it was like the best day of his life.
Only gold medal he's ever gotten in anything, in any sport. Anyways, but it was just funny hearing her talk about this guy. I think he told her before he showed up, he's like, yeah, I'm a banger. I only hit everything hard. So, and literally we're watching him play our first match. First ball goes to him, bangs it right into the net. It was just funny. It was funny. So, I mean, you're going to come across some characters probably if you play blind dates. But what about if it's not a blind date? Any tips for the listener just in terms of tournament tips? Maybe someone listening to this podcast, they have a partner that they know that they signed up for their first ever tournament. What would you tell someone who's playing a tournament for the first time?
Okay. So my like top tips for tournaments is, one, try your best to get in, like I said, even with a rando, 1 to 2 warm-up games. I think that's so key. For me, I start out like nervy. So like getting in some games really helps kind of loosen me up. I always say I'm like a slow starter a little bit. So that really is a huge tip that helps my gameplay, seeing if I can get in like a couple matches before my first match. And then second is, dude, bring food. Like, especially if you make it deep into the bracket, you don't realize how long these tournament days might go. The first couple tournaments we did, we never brought food, and it was terrible. I don't know why we did that. So bring food. Make sure you have electrolytes. And, you know, again, depending on what tournament you're doing, whether it's a local one or like a big one like APP or PPA, just be moving throughout the day. Like, stopping and starting can be really hard. Actually, I think that's why you and Daniel had a hard time. It's because you did a lot of stop and starting. And so just making sure that you stay warm, that you keep warming up. If you need to take a break and go in the shade, but then get warmed up before your next match. And honestly, I think another tip that just is really important is just have fun. You know, tournaments can be so fun.
Did you mention timeouts?
Oh, no, I didn't, but you can.
I think that's a big one too. Like, you don't think about taking timeouts when you're playing rec play, but you have timeouts in a tournament, which if you use them, if the momentum starts to swing, or if you just need to take five because you got a, I don't know if it's a 5 minute.
Get mad.
I think it's like a,
I always take them if I get mad.
Yeah, if you get mad. I think it's like a 2 minute break or one.
It's a 1 minute, okay. 1 minute timeout.
To take one, you know, take 1 minute. It's actually really, can be really helpful to call timeouts. Just use them. Especially if you're down, like other team gets a game point, you should just call a timeout. You never know. Another thing I think that I would say is play to win. Don't play not to lose. You know, I think it's when I first started playing a tournament, it's like very easy to be like a little timid, a little tight, because you just don't want to make mistakes. You don't want to lose, and you kind of get away from your game. So play to win. Don't just play to not lose. I think that that mindset will take you a long way in a tournament. But yeah, that's some tournament tips that we would advise. I think we had a question come in from one of our previous podcasts.
Yes. So we're going to do our kind of Q&A section. And so we had a question come in on our last podcast, and it said, I can hang decently with 4-0s, but I never take hard shots down the line like most of them do. It always feels too risky for me to miss. Is it worth practicing that shot and taking the risk in a game, or can a player increase their duper without having a killer line shot?
Yeah, so real quick, if you don't know what a duper is, that's dynamic use of dynamic universal pickleball rating. I think I a little bit of a tongue twister there. So duper is the known player rating system for pickleball players. If you don't have an account, you can go create one. You can log matches. You can, if you play in a recognized sanctioned tournament, your matches will automatically get uploaded to duper, and you can get a rating that way. So this guy, I think what's interesting is he's asking if he needs to be able to hit a down the line drive. He's saying it's risky, but in order to increase his duper, which I think is a really great question. You know, I think a lot of people want to know, what do I need to do to get to the next level? Mm-hmm. And I think what I would say is, if you want to increase your duper, that means you want to get better. If you want to get better, you need to be able to hit more types of shots. I'd say the big caveat here, I think what he's wanting to play with is risk versus reward. So I think understanding where you make contact with the ball is huge. If I get a ball that comes to one of the sidelines, that's a ball that I could very easily try to rip down the line because I'm hitting straight. If I get a ball that's more in the middle of the court and I try to hit to one of the sidelines, now I have a worse angle. And so it's much more hard to keep that ball in. This is why in a singles match, you might see a lot of people try to return to the middle because you have less angles to work with. And it's harder to hit lines if the ball's placed in the middle of the court. So what I would say to this gentleman, was his name Danny? I can't remember his name.
I don't know.
But what I would say to this guy is, one, maybe recognize where the ball is located on the court so that you can hit straight. And two, I would absolutely start in a drill-like setting, maybe incorporating learning how to hit balls down the line, because the more shots that you feel comfortable with, the more success you're going to have and the higher your duper will be. Anything you would add?
No. And just a reminder, like, I think sometimes we can get really caught up in like hitting these flashy shots, and a down the line shot's a great shot to learn, but you increase your duper by winning games, and one down the line shot or two down the line shots aren't going to win a game. It's doing everything well consistently. So I think it's great to practice this shot, but you still won't win a game if you're still not dinking consistently, if you're still not getting up to the kitchen line consistently. And so just remember, like, if you want to win games, you know, start getting really consistent with all your basic and fundamental things. I think that is a great place to start. And once you feel comfortable and you're like, I actually feel like I'm pretty good at all my fundamental things, then I think it's great to start learning new shots and adding and incorporating new stuff like that.
That's great. And I do want to bring this up as just kind of like a side note before we wrap up. you know, I think there are a lot of people out there that get a little too attached to Duper. And I think that it's just important to take that number with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. It's important not just to look at what your Duper number is, but the amount of games that have been logged and when was the last game that was logged. The more accurate your Duper is going to be are people that are consistently logging games and people that are logging games more recently. Like for me, for example, the last two tournaments that I was signed up for, I missed due to an injury. So I haven't logged a match in Duper in a long time. So my number might not be as reflective as I am because I've been drilling, I've been training. It might not be exactly where I am today. And there are other people that the inverse is true. You know, they might have a really high Duper, but they might have only played a few games and they might have a really small sample size. So I think you want to take into consideration, not weighing your Duper number too big. I think it is the most accurate rating system. I think there's a lot of truth to it, but people get very, you know, concerned about their Duper scores when in reality, there's a lot of things that could factor into, you know, there are days where I might play a whole, you know, I might play like a 5-5 and there's days where I might play like a 3-5. You know, some of it could just be the day, could be inconsistency. But yeah, just some things to keep in mind when it comes to Duper. I think that's important for people to know that is out there and that is one way that you can start getting rated.
And for those of you who want to submit any questions, go ahead and head to our YouTube feed here on Selkirk TV and go ahead, just comment them and maybe we'll feature your question on a future podcast.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, thanks so much for hanging out with us today, guys. We'll see you on the next one.